We've entitled our remarks this morning, Highlights from the Prophecy of Joel. And let's go to the third chapter of Joel and pick up at verse 11. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about. Thither cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full, the fats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. The Lord also shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake. But the Lord will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Israel. So shall ye know that I am the Lord your God dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no strangers pass through her any more. And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drop down new wine, and the hills shall flow with milk, and all the rivers of Judah shall flow with waters, and a fountain shall come forth of the house of the Lord, and shall water the valley of Shittim. Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness, for the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. But Judah shall dwell forever, and Jerusalem from generation to generation. For I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for the Lord dwelleth in Zion. As we said, we've entitled our remarks, Highlights from the Prophecy of Joel. And it was our intention to have a slide presentation as well, but we were missing a critical cord and weren't able to connect. So I'll do my best to explain what you would have been seeing on the screen. Let's go to the first chapter of Joel. And you'll want to keep your place here in Joel because while we'll be jumping around a bit in each chapter, we're going to indeed try to maintain some continuity in our movement. But let's pick up at Joel 1 and read the first three verses. The word of the Lord that came to Joel, the son of Pethuel, hear this, ye old men, and give ear, all ye inhabitants of the land. Hath this been in your days, or even in the days of your fathers? Tell your children of it, and let your children tell their children, and their children another generation. The name Joel means Yah is strength. Yah is strength. Pethuel means persuaded of Yahweh. It's very difficult for us to determine the actual time of Joel. The writing is such that there is no historical account of Joel. However, his reference to Jerusalem, to Judah, the temple, the priests, and the offerings lead us to conclude that Joel was of the southern kingdom. And while there are differing opinions, it appears that the date of its writing is most reasonably placed just prior to the Babylonian invasion. With this timing, Joel was a contemporary of Jeremiah, as well as Ezekiel and Zephaniah. Now, we're going to look at a comparison of a few verses between Joel and Zephaniah, and there are many, many more, but just to illustrate the similarities, we read in Zephaniah, the first chapter, in verse 7, Zephaniah 1:7, the day of Yahweh is at hand. In Joel, the first chapter, in verse 15, we read the exact same wording, the day of Yahweh is at hand. In Zephaniah, still in the first chapter, in verses 14 and 15, we read, "The great day of Yahweh is near. It is near and hasteth greatly. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness." And note the similarity of that to Joel, the second chapter, in verses 1 and 2. "The day of Yahweh cometh, for it is nigh at hand, a day of gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains." In Zephaniah 1, in verse 18, we read, "The whole land shall be devoured by the fire of his jealousy." And in Joel, the second chapter, verses 3 and 5, we read, "A fire devoureth before them, like the noise of a flame of fire that devoureth the stubble." In the third chapter of Zephaniah, verses 15 and verse 7, "The king of Israel, even Yahweh, is in the midst of thee." And Joel 2 and verse 27 reads, "And ye shall know that I am in the midst of Israel." So we can see the many parallels that existed between those prophets, Zephaniah and Joel. Let's go back to the first chapter of Joel and let's read verse 4. "That which the palmer worm hath left hath the locust eaten, and that which the locust hath left hath the cankerworm eaten, and that which the cankerworm hath left hath the caterpillar eaten." Israel at this time was to experience an unparalleled natural disaster in the form of locusts. The Hebrew is very specific on this verse, and it reads like this: "Shearers," S-H-E-A-R-E-R-S, shearers, "remnant," the shearer's remnant, "the swarmer eats. The swarmer's remnant, the lapper eats. The lapper's remnant, the devourer eats." More devastating was this locust plague than all the other previous plagues, more severe even than that which we know of in Egypt. In Exodus 10:15, we read relative to that plague in Egypt, "They covered the face of the whole earth so that the land was darkened, and they did eat every herb of the land." I'd like to read a little about the natural locust. "Singly or in small numbers, the locusts lead inconspicuous lives and are at most just a pest like our grasshoppers. But periodically, they appear in such huge numbers and cause such havoc that they become a catastrophic plague." The interesting thing about the locust is they have no way to determine their flight path. They are carried by the wind. And we can see how Yahweh, throughout the history of his plan, has used the locust to execute his will. And we see the parallels to those natural armies that brought devastation to Israel in their wickedness. The adult desert locust mates several times during its short life. The eggs are laid in the desert sand in clusters of up to 100 at each laying. In good conditions, the eggs hatch in about 3 weeks, and the very hungry hopper stage locust emerges to feed upon the vegetation growing from the moist sand. Shedding their egg skins to the hoppers, the hoppers rapidly grow and pass through a series of molts. Each stage is larger and more mature. And then ultimately they're able to fly. It's interesting because they're in such close proximity and they're rubbing their legs together. And as a result, hormone that's released creates more of that drive and intensity to swarm. It's fascinating to see how God, you know, has used these natural situations to bring about his will. He says daily food intake is about the same as the weight of the insect. And we know they're also cannibals, and they range, their total life range is measured in yards or a few miles. The range of the desert locust is simply staggering. In its own lifetime, it can travel anywhere from 3,000 to 4,000 miles, which is truly unique. As a result of the desert locust, its capabilities, it invades 11 million square miles, or 20% of the Earth's land areas. And we don't see these locust plagues often. I think the last one was in Africa in 2007, but they are totally devastating. We can see here that the locust symbol is therefore a composite designation of the kingdoms of men, Daniel's image being another, in their oppression of the people of God. So there is a direct parallel between the stages of the locust and the nations that make up the image of Nebuchadnezzar. For example, the palmer worm, the Hebrew is gazam, G-A-Z-A-M. It has a specific numerical value, and this is interesting. It's got a numerical value of 50. And we know that Hebrew words can be numbered in the sense of giving a numerical value. The locust, or the arbalum, the swarming locust, the palmer worm, the first one is the gnawing locust. That which is referred to as the locust here is the arbalum, and it's a swarming locust. Its numerical value is 208. The canker worm, or yalek, Y-A-L-E-K, or licking locust, its numerical value is 140. And the caterpillar, or chesil, C-H-E-S-I-L, and I'm not sure about the pronunciation on these, of course, or destroying locust, its numerical value is 108, for a total numerical value of 506. Now, interestingly, there is a direct parallel to the nations of Nebuchadnezzar's image. In subjection to Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, to the time of Cyrus, is a 50-year period, which corresponds with the numerical value of the palmer worm. Persia ruled from B.C. 538 to 330 until Alexander came on the scene. That was a period of 208 years. The locust, or swarming locust, remember that numerical value was 208 years. The Greeks ruled B.C. 330 to 190 when the Jews rebelled, and Israel was not ruled under the Maccabees. That was a 140-year period. The canker worm, or the licking locust, the yalek, is a numerical value of 140. Rome ruled from 38 BC to AD 70, a period of 108 years, when every vestige of political Israel ceased. For a total, over these four empires, a total of 506 years. And you'll remember the total numerical value for these stages of the locust was also 506 years. Not a coincidence by any means, but rather a composite designation of the kingdoms of men. Let's go to the sixth verse of Joel. And I will be skipping some verses. For a nation has come up upon my land, strong and without number, whose teeth are the teeth of a lion, whose teeth are the teeth of a lion. And he hath the cheek teeth of a great lion, whose teeth are the teeth of a lion. We've already alluded to the parallel of Daniel 2. Now, Joel expands his vision to include Daniel 7. And we know that in Daniel 7, there were four beasts that were shown. Of course, there was the winged lion, representative of Babylon, and we know that, the winged lion was directly representative of Assyria, and the upright lion, typical of Babylon. Then, of course, the Medo-Persian bear, and then the four-winged leopard or Greece, and then lastly, the fourth beast representing Rome. So we see that what we read here in Joel relative to the stages of the locust corresponds with the nations mentioned in the image of Nebuchadnezzar, as well as the beasts of Daniel 7. Joel portrays the northern army of Babylon as a winged locust with lion's teeth. We see the harmony of the prophets as we read in Jeremiah 50 in verses 17 and 18. Jeremiah 50, 17 and 18. Israel is a scattered sheep. The lions have driven him away. This Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, hath broken his bones. There are many references to the locust in Scripture, and everything mentioned, interestingly, is scientifically correct. Let's go to Nahum, the third chapter. Nahum 3, picking up at verse 15. There shall the fire devour thee, the sword shall cut thee off. It shall eat thee up like the cankerworm. Make thyself many as the cankerworm, make thyself many as the locust. Thou hast multiplied thy merchants above the stars of heaven. The cankerworm spoileth and fleeth away. Thy crowned are as the locusts, and thy captains as the great grasshoppers which camp in the hedges in the cold day. But when the sun ariseth, they flee away, and their place is not known where they are. And it's interesting because if the body temperature of the locust drops below 70 degrees, they cannot fly. And this is what the scriptures portray here. Let's go to Exodus, the 10th chapter, and consider that plague once again in Egypt. Exodus 10. And let's start at verse 12. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand over the land of Egypt for the locust, that they may come up upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the land, even all that the hail hath left. And Moses stretched forth his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind upon the land all that day and all that night. And when it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. And the locusts went up over all the land of Egypt and rested in all the coasts of Egypt. Very grievous were they. Before them there were no such locusts as they, neither after them shall be such, other than what we read of here in Joel in symbol. And read also in verse 15, for they covered the face of the whole earth, so that the land was darkened, and they did eat every herb of the land and all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left, and there remained not any green thing in the trees or in the herbs of the field through all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron in haste, and he said, I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you. Now therefore forgive, I pray thee, my sin only this once, and entreat the Lord your God that he may take away from me this death only. Let's go to Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter, in verse 38. Deuteronomy 28, 38. Thou shalt carry much seed out into the field, and shalt gather but little in, for the locust shall consume it. And just one last reference in 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles, the 7th chapter. In verses 12 and 13. And the Lord appeared to Solomon by night and said unto him, I have heard thy prayer and have chosen this place in myself for an house of sacrifice. If I shut up heaven that there be no rain, or I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people." So we can see how God at various times, you know, used the locusts for his purpose. They were consistently an object, an instrument of judgment. Let's go back to the first chapter of Joel, and we're going to jump all the way down to verse 15. "Alas for the day, for the day of the Lord is at hand, and as a destruction from the Almighty shall it come." To this point, the day of the Lord denoted deliverance from the enemy for Israel in promise, as noted in 2 Samuel 7, verses 9 through 24, in blessings, as in Genesis 49, in songs of triumph, as in Psalm 78, 42, the day when he delivered them from the enemy. This day of the Lord, however, that's spoken of here, would be against the nation of Israel. Let's go to Zephaniah. Zephaniah, and let's look at the first chapter and read verses 14 through 18. Note the parallels. "The great day of the Lord is near. It is near and hasteth greatly, even the voice of the day of the Lord. The mighty man shall cry there bitterly. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness, a day of the trumpet and alarm against the fenced cities and against the high towers. And I will bring distress upon men, that they shall walk like blind men, because they have sinned against the Lord. And their blood shall be poured out as dust, and their flesh as the dung. Neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day of the Lord's wrath. But the whole land shall be devoured by the fire of his jealousy. For he shall make even a speedy riddance of all them that dwell in the land." So we can see that the Lord, in his jealousy, will recompense those nations that have avenged themselves against Israel. Let's go to the second chapter of Joel. And we're going to pick up at verse 2. And again, you'll notice I'm jumping around, and it's not that the other verses aren't quite significant, but I think we can get the continuity by looking at these various verses. Joel 2 and verse 2. "A day of darkness and of gloominess, a day of clouds and of thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains. A great people and a strong. There hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. A fire devoureth before them, and behold, and behind them a flame burneth. The land is as the Garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness, yea, and nothing shall escape them." As dreadful as this invasion by the Babylonians would be, Joel, to his dismay, sees a more devastating invasion after many generations, an activity which would evoke the jealousy of Yahweh against the Gogian northern army. Let's jump down to verse 18 of the second chapter of Joel. "Then will the Lord be jealous for his land and pity his people. Yea, the Lord will answer and say unto his people, Behold, I will send you corn and wine and oil, and ye shall be satisfied therewith. And I will no more make you a reproach among the heathen. But I will remove far off from you the northern army, and will drive him into a land barren and desolate, with his face toward the east sea, and his hinder part toward the utmost sea. And his stink shall come up, and his ill savor shall come up, because he hath done great things." You know, today we're seeing many things transpiring in relation to the development of the Gogian host. We, as believers, have a front row seat, if you will, to the prophecy being fulfilled around us. We're seeing the exchange, the negotiation between the Western powers and Russia. Think about what a great blessing it is for us to know what is actually transpiring and what will in time come to pass. Let's go back to Joel 2. Look at verse 4. The appearance of them is as the appearance of horses, and as horsemen so shall they run. The locust head is much like that of a horse, and unfortunately we don't have a picture to look at, but the shape of the locust head looks very much like a horse's head. Let's go to Jeremiah, the 6th chapter. Jeremiah 6, verses 22 and 23. Thus saith the Lord, behold, a people cometh from the north country, and a great nation shall be raised from the sides of the earth. They shall lay hold on bow and spear. They are cruel and have no mercy. Their voice roareth like the sea, and they ride upon horses set in array as men for war against thee, O daughter of Zion. And in the 4th chapter of Jeremiah, in verse 13, we read, behold, he shall come up as clouds, and his chariots shall be as a whirlwind. His horses are swifter than eagles. Woe unto us, for we are spoiled. And it's speaking, of course, of the northern invader. And in this case, not Babylon, but the Gogian host. Going back to Joel 2, we read in verse 5, like the noise of chariots on the tops of the mountains shall they leap, like the noise of a flame of fire that devoureth a stubble, as a strong people set in battle array. As a strong people set in battle array. Let's look at Jeremiah once again, the 8th chapter. In verse 16. Jeremiah 8:16. The snorting of his horses was heard from Dan. The whole land trembled at the sound of the neighing of his strong ones. For they are come and have devoured the land and all that is in it, the city and those that dwelleth or that dwell therein. And certainly this was characteristic of the nation of Babylon, but it is also representative of the capabilities of the Gogian host. And while they may not necessarily be on horses, they will have great strength and prowess in contending for the Middle East. As a strong people set in battle array. Joel's emphasis here is upon a duality of the promise. The succeeding verses speak of the Babylonian invasion, and we'll see many parallels to the latter-day Gogian invasion. We read already Joel 2, verses 18 and 19, where Joel actually transcends time, even to the years of many generations, as it reads. Skipping all the intervening history, Joel is consumed by the horror of what he sees. And what he sees is the Gogian invasion. You know, that which is soon to come to pass in the Middle East. Joel is projected to the day of Yahweh's jealousy. Let's go to Ezekiel 39. Ezekiel 39 and verse 23. And the heathen shall know that the house of Israel went into captivity for their iniquity, because they trespassed against me. Therefore hid I my face from them and gave them into the hand of their enemies, so fell they all by the sword. According to their uncleanness and according to their transgressions have I done unto them and hid my face from them. Therefore thus saith the Lord God, now will I bring again the captivity of Jacob. And there, of course, it's referring to the release of Jacob. And have mercy upon the whole house of Israel, and will be jealous for my holy name, after they have borne their shame and all their trespasses whereby they have trespassed against me, when they dwelt safely in their land, and none made them afraid. Joel is swept past the day of the present evil of the Babylonians to the day when Yahweh declares, in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath, there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel. Pestilence, blood, overflowing rain, great hailstones, fire, and brimstone, as we read from Ezekiel 38, verses 19 and 22. Joel 2, verse 20, that we read earlier, is speaking specifically of the king of the north, Gog of the land of Magog, who will plant the tabernacles of his palace, as we read in Daniel 11, 45, between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, but who will come to his end, and none shall help him. In the day of Yahweh's jealousy, Gog will be overthrown, as we read in Ezekiel 38. He will be turned back and shall fall upon the mountains of Israel, and shall fall upon the open field, as we read in Ezekiel 39. And his stink shall go up. Let's look at 39, Ezekiel 39, verse 11. And he measured the breadth, verse 11 of 39. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will give unto Gog a place there of graves in Israel, the valley of the passengers on the east of the sea. And it shall stop the noses of the passengers, and there shall they bury Gog and all his multitude, and they shall call it the valley of Haman Gog. And 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying of them, that they may cleanse the land. Let's go to Isaiah, the 34th chapter. Once again, we see the agreement of the prophets in these things. Isaiah 34, verses 2 and 3. Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye people. Let the earth hear, and all that is therein, the world, and all the things that come forth of it. For the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He hath utterly destroyed them. He hath delivered them to the slaughter. All right, let's go back to Joel 2, and let's look at verse 32. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be delivered. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as the Lord has said, and in the remnant whom the Lord shall call. During the Gogian invasion, Jerusalem shall be the seat of the king of the north. With the overthrow of Gog and the establishment of Christ in Jerusalem, Mount Zion shall then be the seat of deliverance, as we just read in Isaiah 2, verses 3 and 4. Let's go to the third chapter of Joel, and let's read verses 1 and 2. For behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat. The valley of Jehoshaphat. Let's go to Ezekiel, the 38th chapter. Once again. In verse 9. Thou shalt ascend and come like a storm, and thou shalt be like a cloud to cover the land, thou and all thy bands and many people with thee. Let's go to Zephaniah. Zephaniah, the third chapter, and verse 8. Therefore wait ye upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey. For my determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger. For all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. Let's go to Zechariah, the 14th chapter. Notice the similarity of all of these prophecies. Zechariah 14 and verse 2. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. So it's very apparent that the nation of Israel will not escape or be spared, but will suffer these consequences. Let's go to Micah, the 4th chapter, Micah 4, verses 11 and 12. Now also many nations are gathered against thee that say, let her be defiled, and let her eye look upon Zion. But they know not the thoughts of the Lord, neither understand they his counsel. For he shall gather them as the sheaves into the floor. This, of course, we know as the Battle of Armageddon. Turn with me, please, to Revelation 16, where we have mention of this battle, Armageddon. Revelation 16 and verse 16. And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. And we know that this comes from actually three words, arema, a heap of sheaves, gai, G-A-I, or gai, valley, and then dawn, or judgment, a heap of sheaves in the valley of judgment. Now remember from Joel 3, let's go back there. Joel 3 and verse 1. For behold, in those days and in that time when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat. And this will be the valley, or the valley of judgment. In let's go back to Joel once again, the 3rd verse. And they cast lots for my people, and have given a boy for an harlot, and sold a girl for wine, that they might drink. Yea, and what have ye to do with me, O Tyre and Zidon, and all the coasts of Palestine? Will ye render me a recompense? And if ye recompense me swiftly and speedily, will I return your recompense upon your own head? Because ye have taken my silver and my gold, and have carried into your temples my goodly pleasant things. The children also of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have ye sold unto the Grecians, that ye might remove them far off from their border. Behold, I will raise them out of the place whither ye have sold them, and will return your recompense upon your own head. And I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hand of the children of Judah, and they shall sell them to the Sabaeans, to a people far off, for the Lord has spoken it. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles. Prepare ye war. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. And he goes on to say, assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen. We know that Daniel, in like manner, depicts the judgment upon the nations. Let's go to Daniel, the 7th chapter. And just consider for a moment how many of the prophets that we have reviewed this morning and the similarity of their message. Daniel 7, verses 9 and 10. I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him, thousand thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. And note verse 26. But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. Joel, in verse 12 of Joel 3, presents us with the picture of a multitude too great to number, resembling the thickly sown valley ready for harvest. Their wickedness was ripened, and the time had come for the ground to be cleared of its wickedness. It is Yahweh who does the cutting off. Thy mighty ones, mentioned here, or the Hebrew is Gabor, of Joel 3:11, it is a term referring to Christ and the redeemed, as we know, the multitudinous Christ, led by him who is El Gabor, or the mighty warrior, even Christ. Let's go back to Joel 3. And pick up at verse 13. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full. The fats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. And here the immortals are being addressed to take action. Note verse 16, the Lord also shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake. Israel, having suffered the invasion of the locusts, the Babylonians, whose teeth are like a lion, shall in this last day hear the lion of the tribe of Judah roar out of Zion, the latter-day invader, Gog. The political and national earth shall be shaken. Notice Zechariah, the 14th chapter. And for the sake of time, we'll only look at a single reference here. Zechariah 14 and verse 5. And we shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Aziel. Yea, ye shall flee like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. And the Lord my God shall come, and all the saints with thee. And there will be this great shaking. We have it in Psalm 46 and verse 3, Isaiah 2:19, and also in Ezekiel 38:20. But we're also told here in Joel 3:16 that the Lord will be the hope of his people. Going back to Joel, we read in verse 17, so shall ye know that I am the Lord your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall be no strangers, and there shall no strangers pass through her any more. Dwelling in Zion, my holy nation, Yahweh will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. It is his habitation. We have many references to this throughout the scriptures. Let's look at Psalm 132. Psalm 132 and verse 13. For the Lord hath chosen Zion, he hath desired it for his habitation. Going back to Joel, we read in verse 18, and it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drop down new wine, and the hills shall flow with milk, and all the rivers of Judah shall flow with waters, and a fountain shall come forth of the house of the Lord and shall water the valley of Shittim. Living waters shall go out from Jerusalem. And we know this is a literality, as there will be a stream that flows from under the temple. And we know that it is also speaking of the fact that the living waters of truth will go out to the nations at the hand of Christ and the saints. And once again in Zechariah 14, And this also appears in Ezekiel 47:1. Zechariah 14 and verse 8. And it shall be in that day that living waters shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea, and half of them toward the hinder sea. This is the Dead Sea, the former sea, and the hinder sea being the Mediterranean. In summer and winter shall it be. Let's go back to Joel. And let's read verses 18 through 20. And it shall come to pass in that day, verses 19 and 20. Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness for the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. But Judah shall dwell forever, and Jerusalem from generation to generation. Judah will dwell forever. And we have a number of places where this is highlighted and reiterated. Let's look at Psalm 89. A couple of other references are Amos 9:15 and Zechariah 12, 6 through 8. But Psalm 89, verses 34 through 37. My covenant will I not break, nor after the thing that has gone out of my lips. Once have I sworn by my holiness that I will not lie unto David. His seed shall endure forever, and his throne as the sun before me. It shall be established forever as the moon, and as a fruitful witness in heaven. Selah. In Joel 3:21, we read, For I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for the Lord dwelleth in Zion. The Hebrew here is, I will avenge. I will avenge. Notice Jeremiah 50 and verse 20. In those days and in that time, saith the Lord, the iniquity of Israel shall be sought for, and there shall be none. And the sins of Judah, and they shall not be found, for I will pardon them whom I reserve. And we read there in that last verse, For the Lord dwelleth in Zion. There will be eternal blessings as a result of God's presence in Zion. And once again, we are living at a time when we're seeing all this come to pass. And we should be greatly encouraged by the activities that are taking place in the political world, and prepare ourselves for our Master's return. Let us now enter into our memorial service by singing together hymn 155. Bread of heaven on thee we feed, for thy flesh is meat indeed. Hymn 155.